Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy. Be sure to check us out on Facebook and our YouTube channel and our podcast and our great sponsors, Your Dolce Vita, Italy Rooting, and Abitivo Casa. And today I have a great guest, first guest of the new year, Diana Del Russo, who besides having a great Italian family is also a children's book author. So welcome, Diana. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me, and Happy New Year to you and all your listeners.
Thanks. Same to you. Appreciate it. So the first thing I think to hit on is you're out on the West Coast. So now has your Italian family always lived on the West Coast, or did you migrate out there?
No, actually, my Italian family migrated from Pesentro, Italy to, they came via New York, of course, and they landed in the Aliquippa, Pennsylvania area outside of Pittsburgh. So they lived on the river, a small steel mill community.
Oh, that's interesting. So now, I don't think they had a lot of steel mills in Italy back at the time. Do you know why they came and how they wound up in that business?
Yeah, well, besides the steel mills, the railroad was real big there. So my grandfather actually worked on the railroad all the years that I knew growing up. And his relatives that led him here also worked on the railroad. So I think that's how that happened. But yeah, so I lived there 30 plus years until I moved to California.
And so when they were working on the railroad, were they working building, or were they like, you know, engineers and conductors and things like that?
You know, they were, I think, the track workers, you know, keeping the tracks, you know, working well and helping out with some of the trains and in the yard and that kind of thing. Yeah.
And what year did they come? Did they come early in the century?
Actually, my grandfather, the poor guy, he would get motion sick. From what I'm told, he'd get motion sickness on the boat. And poor guy came across three times, brought his family little by little. So the last time he came was with my mother and her sister, and that was in 1950. So in 1950 and then 1953, I think he may have gone back for his wife and youngest daughter, or maybe a relative brought them. That part I'm not clear on. But by 1953, they were all here. Our whole immediate family were living in Pennsylvania.
Oh, so your family came late. They came around the same time as my uncle came, who was left there by my grandparents when they came in 1915. So did they talk about, well, let me ask the question a different way. My uncle, he had to come through Canada. Was your grandfather, were they able to come right in directly into the USA? Do you know?
I believe so. I believe they came right into Ellis Island.
Oh, that's interesting because...
Yeah, I found their ship manifest, which is really cool.
Yeah, I have my father's mother when she came. My mother's parents I don't have. But now that's interesting because I know after the war, it was tough for people to come in, but maybe they just hit that sweet spot, you know?
Maybe so. Yeah, I'm not sure. But like I said, poor guy, he came across three or four times. So I'm not sure how each trip went. The only one I know really more about would be the 1950 with my mother and her older sister.
So your mother and all her siblings were born in Italy then?
Correct. Yes. I'm the first generation American here.
Oh, neat. So how old was your mother when she got here?
It was just before her 15th birthday.
Oh, wow. So did she ever talk about comparisons between life in Italy and life here?
Oh, yeah. She and my mom, too. Her story was a little unique, a little different than most in that she had contracted tuberculosis. I don't know, in Italy or on the boat. I'm not sure. But when she got here, it was detected that she had tuberculosis. So she was separated from her family immediately and put into a hospital in Pittsburgh, where she lived in that hospital for 2 years. With the nuns that ran it. And so the story she tells me is her introduction to the U.S. was the hospital. And she lived there 2 years with a bunch of other immigrants who had tuberculosis. She taught the nuns Italian as they taught her English. So when she came out, when rejoined her family in Aliquippa 2 years later, you know, she was this teenager, 16, 17 years old, and she could speak and she could read, write, and speak English, which was, you know, really to her benefit.
Wow, that's an incredible story. You know, had that happened, you know, in the early part of the century, they may have just sent her back.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been very, very different. So, yeah, you know, it's, I always think about things like that. I think about, had she not survived the tuberculosis, I wouldn't be here. You know, had she not been able to stay in America, I wouldn't be here. So, you know, things happen the way they happened, you know, for a reason. So, yeah.
Yeah, and when my uncle was coming over, they were supposed to come, and one of my cousins, she had some kind of liver disease or issue or something like that, that supposedly, I think, came from sheep, because, you know, they lived in a real farming community, and they had to postpone their trip, and it was, I think it was even touch and go whether she was even, you know, ever going to be able to come here, but eventually they were able to come. Wow, that's exciting. I love talking to people that, I didn't realize that you came that recent. I love talking to people that are first generation, or because the stories are more current, you know, from the parents and grandparents and things like that. So what did the family do in Italy?
Funny you mentioned sheep. My grandfather was a sheep herder. He was a shepherd. And yeah, that's what he did. And it's really nice that in 2014, my husband and I got to take a trip to Italy, and we went to my parents, my mother's village in Pietrandrò, Italy, which is in Abruzzo. And we got to go to her village. We got to walk through the home that she was raised in. That was a really cool experience. We got to, you know, see the mountain where my grandfather would take the sheep and all of that. And we actually got to talk to a couple who knew my family very well. The woman was best friends with my aunt who came across with my mother. So she hooked us up with them, and they told us all about their days, you know, with moving the sheep and all the things that they did and how they lived. And when you think about how it's a hard life, when you think about how hard they lived, you know, they didn't have running water. They didn't have a full kitchen or bathroom inside their home. So when you think about how they lived, it was a really hard life.
Yeah, definitely. Last year when we went to Molise and Capricotta, which is one of my ancestral towns, they told us about how the sheep herders would take the sheep from Molise down through Abruzzo and into Puglia. And yes. They gave us a meal similar to what they said that the sheep herders would eat, you know, when they traveled. And it was really basic, you know, mashed potatoes with lentils and sheep stew. And they said, you know, they said what would happen is if there was a lame sheep or something like that, that's what they would eat on the trip.
That would be, yeah. My grandfather said the same thing, and they would take the sheep over the mountain to the same town you were just mentioning, that was it Polera? Yeah. So pretty interesting. I mean, it's, it was a hard life. My mom talked about carrying the jugs of water on her head from the fountain in the piazza to bring it home so they could cook or they could wash, you know. It's then there's that public stream. It's still there today. There's a public stream where the women would go to do the laundry.
And I don't think people realize that, you know, half a century ago, that's the way a lot of these places in Italy were.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was 1950 that my mom left. So, I mean, that's, you know, it's not like it was in the 1800s or anything. It was 1950 when she left, and my grandmother was still carrying water on her head and washing her clothes in a public stream, you know? So yeah, it's nice to see that their town now has full kitchens and bathrooms in their homes. They now have plumbing, running water. They have electricity, you know, they have all the modern, they have internet, you know, they have all the modern conveniences, but there's still a medieval hill town with a castle. And, you know, there's still the old, old buildings, and it's just, what an amazing experience. I really hope to go back again.
Yeah, and that's the way we felt. And I'm sure you experienced the same thing that we did. One thing that they still do is they make their own ham and olive oil and wine, and, you know, they're not buying it in the store.
No. And, you know, my grandfather continued that here in the U.S. I don't know if your family did the same, but my grandfather, his oldest son, Johnny, and then my aunt's husband, Louie, the three of them, they had a cold cellar in the basement, and you'd go in there any given time and you'd have, you know, a lamb hanging there from his feet or a pig hanging there from his feet, you know, and they're half a cow, whatever. And they made their own wine, and they made their own sausage. made their own cheese. I mean, it was just amazing, everything that they did. They canned, they had a huge garden. My grandmother, they all grew tomatoes, and we would all help can tomatoes in the jars. And so all winter long, you'd have all this fresh, wonderful food because they had the cold cellar, and they kept all the jars of sauce and all the jars of peppers and everything in the cold cellar. So it was pretty cool. It's a whole different life than what we have today.
And you're telling me you don't do that anymore?
I do not. However, I will say it skipped a generation. My generation, as far as I know, doesn't really do any of that. However, our kids are interested. So my daughter and my cousin's daughter and my cousin's other daughter, and there's a few of them that are my cousin's son, they still do all that. They
Oh,
still
that's
do. They
super
do
cool.
all of that. And
Great.
they were either teeny tiny babies when we were living it, or they just know from the stories. They didn't really experience it the way that I did. So it's really cool for them to be, putting up jars of sauce and peppers, roasted peppers, and things like that.
That's so neat. I cheated this year. Not that I've ever made sauce, but I grew some tomatoes and, and some pots out in the back because we have a very, we don't have a big enough yard for a garden anymore. And so what I did is I peeled them. I put them in the water, shocked them, peeled them, and then I put them in bags and froze them. So, I guess that's cheating. But and the reason I did it was because when we were in Italy, they don't, except for Naples, but most of the places we went, they don't make those heavy, thick sauces. Very simple. Tomatoes, olive oil, maybe a little wine, and some garlic or onion, and that's it.
Everything is very light, very fresh, very light. I joke that we were there a month and we ate and ate and ate, but we didn't gain any weight. Just everything is so light and so fresh. And then, of course, all the walking, a lot of
I was going to
walking
say you're walking up and down the mountains.
up and down the whole village is on steps, so you're up and down steps constantly. It's what an experience. I just keep going back to that. I just It blows my mind. We have, thousands of photos that we took. Thank goodness for iPhones and good digital cameras and everything, because we took so many photos. And we got to see, like, where my mom would stomp the grapes when she was a kid. She told
Wow.
me so many stories about stomping the grapes, and we got to see where that location was. And like I said, just the fountains and the piazzas where they carried the water and everything. Just really cool, really cool. And growing up with having them, having my grandparents and my aunts and uncles so fresh from Italy, they continued to live that way as much as possible. Making everything homemade, growing everything, doing everything fresh, putting that pig or that lamb on the spit, at the family reunions and stuff. And it was a wonderful way to grow up. Every Sunday at grandma's house for dinner, all 50 of us, we had grown and expanded. There was at least 50, 55 of us every Sunday at their house for a big meal and to just, be together. And yeah, great memories.
And that's one of the reasons why I do this, because we need to keep these stories and memories alive. I grew up not quite the same. They still weren't making, curing hams and all of that kind of stuff. But, going to my grandmother's house, especially on her birthday, there'd be 100 people there, and my uncles would all be cooking and things like that. And I think I said this before, we were in my mother's hometown this past year, and one of the staples that we had in the summer barbecues was something called chivalada, which was, it's a lamb sausage with cheese and parsley. And I kind of grew up on that. And when we were there in my mother's hometown, I said, we were in a restaurant, I said, did I have the chivalada? And they said, well, I'm not sure, we'll have to ask. And they had it, and it tasted nothing like what I grew up on. It was just so much better.
I grew up on lamb too, and I love it. Leg of lamb in the sauce, I love it. We were at a restaurant in Abruzzo somewhere, and I ordered a pasta dish with a lamb sauce, and oh my goodness, just melt in your mouth. It was just delicious. And like you said, everything was so light though, nothing heavy.
Yeah, no, it's funny. And I think it was the last trip where I think my daughter wanted to know if we were going to have fettuccine Alfredo, or maybe when we went with her. Yeah, when we went with her, she didn't come this last trip. And I said, They don't have that in Italy. She thought she was going to have the best fettuccine Alfredo she ever ate.
Right,
I said,
right.
No, that's an American dish.
I know.
And I read somewhere that some restaurants, I guess, in the big cities, like maybe Rome and Naples and places like that, you may be able to find that they'll come up with something similar. But yeah, it's funny because I think somebody mentioned that, Italian Americans are looking for it on the menu with chicken parmesan and things like that. It just doesn't
Right. Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's I think for anybody who, I've only been there the one time, so anybody who goes to Italy for the first time has kind of a eye opener, as to what is a true Italian dish and what is not. Yeah, and of course their pizzas are different as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, my wife's not crazy about the pizza there. Although the last trip in Naples, we found one that we really enjoyed. But it is different. But I think that strikes me more than anything else over there is the taste of the olive oil.
Uh-huh.
It tastes nothing like the olive oil, nothing crappy olive oil that we get here.
Exactly. Yeah. I know. My grandmother and my aunts, they had their olive oil and they got imported Italian olive oil. That's all they would use. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't say that I blame them. So now when you did go to the hometown, mm-hmm. did they know you were coming, or you kind of surprised everybody, or?
Well, I don't really have family there, but like I say, my aunt was still alive at the time in 2014, and she contacted her best friend that she grew up with, and her husband were in their 80s. And so they welcomed us. And to us, that to me, that was closest to family, and they were amazing. I felt like I was sitting at my grandparents' table, and we had lunch with them. We got to have a nice visit. We had a translator. And then I met a girl from Jersey, actually, who her name is Laura Lucci. I'm going to plug that in case she listens in. Her name is Laura Lucci. She's from Jersey. Her family's from Jersey. But she would go back to Pietrangera every so often to visit her grandmother. And she met her husband there. So she got married and she's living there and they're raising two daughters there. And when I was there in 2014, she had been there 10 years already. And so she became our guide and our translator the whole week that we were there, which was really, really nice. And that was pretty amazing. I was so grateful to have that kind of person there to translate and really be able to connect with that, what we would consider family. And that was really all we had. Now, since then, very recently, through my book, and through the Italian Facebook pages and the Pietrangera Facebook pages, a woman reached out to me, and it turns out that she's my age, and her mother, they live in Ohio, I found out they live 10, 15 minutes from my daughter. So that's exciting. I'm going to hope to meet them in June. But it turns out that they are somehow distantly related to my family, and that her mother grew up right next door to my mother in the village. So it's been a really cool connection, and it's been really fun to talk with them, especially her mother, and to hear her talk about the same kind of stories my mother had, and talk about the village. Now that I've been there, I can, imagine it all and see it all. So that's been a very nice experience. And that has really just happened within the last 2 to 3 months. So
during that trip, did you go to like some of the big cities too in Italy?
We did. We were there almost a month. We toured Rome a couple times. We toured Florence. I planned the whole trip myself. There was no tour guides. There was no anything like that. I did the whole thing with research online myself, and I booked all the B&Bs myself. And so we did it, and I booked all the drivers and the translators myself. So it was a really freedom kind of a trip where we got to do what we wanted whenever we wanted. We went to Cortona, we went to San Gimignano, we went to all these different hill. I'm mostly interested in the hill town villages. I'm mostly interested in the local people and getting as close to the local people as I can. I'm not really into the big cities or the art galleries or the churches or all that stuff. We did go in a couple churches and art galleries. We did have that experience, but my majority of the time for me was to go to the hilltown villages and be near the people,
Yeah. And the reason I asked was when you're in, at least for me anyway, when I was in the the big cities, you feel like a tourist. But
exactly.
When you're in the hometowns or those small places, you don't.
You feel like family. They make you feel like family. They welcome you. Every cab driver, my husband would tell them that my family was from Abruzzo, and we immediately became like their family. They were driving around instead of their fare, you know? So yeah, it was really cool, but you're right. That's very true. You're just one of the masses in the big cities. Absolutely. We did spend a little time. We spent a week up in Portofino. We did the tour of the Cinque Terre. We took the boat and went on to three of the villages of the Cinque Terre. So that was touristy, and that was kind of fun, but.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com. Yeah, yeah, and you know, it is nice to do that, but I tell everybody, you don't feel Italian in those places. When you go to the small place, especially if it's your hometown, you feel Italian, and they treat you like an Italian.
So, they do. They treat you like family. Yeah. And you can feel your roots. You know, I felt my mom has passed, my grandparents, my aunts and uncles, everybody's passed. And so I felt them all there. You know, I totally felt their presence the whole time. I felt like they were leading us to see the different things that my mom told me about as a child. That, you know, I had no idea that I would get to see where she lived. I had no idea I'd get to see where she stomped the grapes. You know, I had no idea we'd get to experience those kinds of things, but everything fell into place and everything just happened naturally. And I feel like she was really guiding us through that.
Well, yeah. And I believe that. I think there are guides out there. You know, some people think I'm crazy, but there's too many things that just happen that can't just be a coincidence. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, and I think the ancestors want you to be found. So now I'm going to assume that your family was probably in this town for hundreds and hundreds of years. Were you able to get back far?
Well, that is still the mystery. I planned the whole trip myself online, and I found a company that helped me with the genealogy. So when we got to my mom's village, our translator took us right to their commune, kind of like their county courthouse, if you will. And they had seven documents ready for me. So I purchased seven documents, and they were all birth certificates and marriage certificates of my grandparents and my mom and my aunts and uncles. And so out of those seven, they all go back. I got to go back two generations that I had never heard the names of. So that was exciting. So my three-time great-grandparents, I got to go back and on my grandfather's side, and they all show the same village. They all show born in the same village. But this woman that I recently met that I was telling you about, she said that she thinks they actually originated from that town on the other side of the mountain where they would bring the sheep. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that town. It's Polanto or I can't remember the name of it. But so she thinks that that's where they originated, because when we went to the cemetery, we looked up all the ancestors in the cemetery, we could find very few Del Russos. And so that's always been the question, like, okay, if we can't find any more Del Russos going back any further, then where'd they come from? You know, so I'd like to research that and dig a little deeper on that.
Yeah, that would be interesting to find out. You know, my mother's family, they always said that they were from Bari, which they were kind of, but they're actually from a town in Bari called Torito. But then as I was able to research further back, I found out that my grandfather's family was actually from another small town, Acquaviva d'Elefanti. But I don't know how, and it's not that far away from Torito, but you know, by donkey, it's pretty far, you know?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But, so yeah. I don't know how, you know, where they met, how they met. I know they were all farmers, but, you know, how did they wind up, one person from this town and the man from one town and a woman from another town, how they hooked up?
Well, according to this woman that I just met, it was the way they moved the sheep. So the way they moved the sheep, they'd go from town to town, you know, in the winter, they'd get the sheep's they get the sheep out of the mountains and bring them into town or whatever, where they'd sell them in another town. So she said that they would move the sheep from town to town, which my grandfather did tell me that. That's how she's saying that she thinks the first Del Russo man came to Pechendro. So, you know, who knows, but he sounds kind of logical, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that makes sense. Now, were they impacted by the war at all? Did your mom?
Very much so. Yeah, very much so. The Germans came to their hill town village and tried to make us like a stand there or whatever. They chased everybody out of town, from what this woman was just telling me recently. My mom's stories were, this woman was about 3 to 4 years older than my mother, so I think that's why she probably has a little clearer memory. My mom is a little confused about some of it, but my mom had told me that her biggest memory was the Germans were there and her sister were hiding in a pile of hay under the hay. And the Germans came with a pitchfork and they were looking for anybody in the hay. And just as she could see the pitchfork in front of her, that German got called out.
Wow.
And so he was called out of the area. Now, I didn't know where this took place. I didn't know where she was talking about. Well, then this woman told me that there was a barn, a makeshift shack, if you will, kind of barn up in the mountains where they would take the sheep in the bad weather. So when they had the sheep up in the mountains in the bad weather, the shepherds could go in there, duck out of the weather for a while, have their lunch or whatever. So that's where her grandfather or her father and my grandfather took all the kids. So that's where they went. She said, that's where we were. We were all under the hay. Your mother, her sisters, myself, my sisters, we were all under the hay. We were all hiding. And that's when the Germans came with the pitchforks and they were called away before they were all discovered. So, yeah, pretty wild that she was able to, you know, confirm some of those stories. My grandfather told me a story about how the Germans wanted him to fight with them. And he would not. He refused. So all the farmers who refused were thrown in a pit. And he said that they were in this pit for a long time. Now, I don't know anything more about that. This woman didn't remember anything about that. So I don't know how long they were in this pit, how they were treated. My grandfather spoke mostly Italian, a little bit of broken English because of working on the railroad. So I grabbed what I could from his stories. I couldn't understand it all. Unfortunately, I never learned to speak the language, which I kick myself every day now. Mm-hmm. My grandmother spoke basically Italian, a couple of words here and there of English. But all of my aunts and uncles, they all spoke broken enough to communicate. And of course, my mother probably had the best English of everybody. So.
Yeah. And so your grandfather, as far as you know, didn't have to go into the Italian army during.
No, he never did. According to the whole family, he never did. I don't know like what happened. I don't know how that worked out. Obviously, he stayed alive. So I don't know.
Well, it could be similar to my uncle, because my uncle had served in the Italian army before the war. And then by the time the war broke out, I think he had at least two, maybe three children. So he was exempt.
Okay. Okay.
And so your grandfather may have fallen into a category like that, or maybe they considered, because they were either farmers or sheep herders, that they needed the food for the army and things like that. So they let those people
could
do what
be,
they wanted
yeah.
to do.
I wish could I be, had more. I wish I knew more, but yeah.
Could be either one. Yeah. But my uncle didn't have to go. He didn't have to go back in. I have pictures of him in uniform, probably from, I want to say it was probably the mid-30s or something like that. Maybe even earlier than that. And my cousin told me, because she was probably, she's 92, I think now. So probably around the same age as your mom, roughly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's my oldest cousin. She's still alive. And she told me that when they were bombing Bari, that my aunt would gather all the kids up and they would run into the fields outside of the town. I guess they figured they would bomb the town, but the town was so small, they weren't interested in the town. They were interested in bombing the port. Then she remembered when the Americans came, the Americans and the British came, and selling on the black market.
yeah. It's the stories are just sometimes too much for us to even comprehend. You know, we can't imagine,
Yeah,
you know,
no, I know. I know.
can't imagine a war happening right in our backyard, right in our town. Yeah.
So I see you have your book behind you.
Yes.
My cousins, my friends, and I could relate to that, but why don't you tell everybody why you wrote the book and what it's about?
Well, you know, I've been writing since I was a kid in junior high school, and my mother's always been my biggest supporter, biggest fan. And she always told me, you know, you need to make books, make books. And I had a couple of books that I had made but didn't do anything with them. And then when my mom was sick and passing away in 2005, she made me promise that I would make my books. So I've published nine since then, since 2007. I've published nine books. This one obviously celebrates our heritage, and this thing happened because my granddaughter, one of my granddaughters who lives here in California, she doesn't really know all her cousins because they're all over the country, right? And the last time she had seen them all, she was just a little girl, maybe, you know, first, second grade, something like that. So she was in about fifth or sixth grade, and she said to me, "I wish I knew all my cousins. You know, I wish my cousins were my friends," and that kind of thing. So we kind of got into the conversation about the genealogy, about the roots, about how we can be cousins but live far away, you know, things like that. So that's where the idea came from. And I always knew it was going to be English and Italian in my heart because of my heritage. And I figured, okay, well, you know, I have a big Italian family. If nobody else likes the book or buys it, my family will. My cousins will buy it. I have a lot of cousins, you know? So that's why I did it in Italian. Well, then talking to other authors and talking to other friends, they said, you should offer the book in not just Italian, but other languages. So the book does come now. It does come in four different languages. So there's a straight English version, there's a Italian English, Spanish English, and French English. And honestly, the biggest seller to date is the Spanish. There's a lot of Spanish families out there, just like the Italian heritage. They're proud of their heritage. They have a lot of cousins as well. So it's been very warmly received, and I'm so happy about that. What I like about the book is the way we did it. Every page, I don't know if you've had a chance to look, but every page has the verse in English and Italian, or English in the second language. So every, you know, it's a fun way to kind of learn the language a little bit, learn the words. It's a fun way to teach the kids, you know, Nona, or, you know, for grandma, or, you know, the different words. So it's been fun. And then I found a wonderful illustrator. I had found some pictures on the internet that I liked that matched the story perfectly, but you know, you can't just take those pictures off the internet. So I had an artist who recreated through paintings those pictures. And so her paintings are in the book.
Oh,
So
very nice. Yeah.
yeah, and the whole thing is, you know, it's based on family roots. So it's based on the story goes about, it talks about the roots of the tree, and we are all of our families are a branch on the tree, and we are all a leaf on that branch, you know, and how we expand, how we grow. And then it talks about how the wind blows the leaves off the tree, and so we scatter, and sometimes families move all across the country or across the world, and we scatter, but then the leaves sometimes get blown back to the base of the tree and huddle around the tree, and that's like a family reunion when we all kind of come back together. So it's I think a very simple and easy way for a child to comprehend their roots and their family that they may not see or know in person. So that's the story behind the
Yeah,
story.
that's so cool. And it's like an art book too.
Yeah, it is. It's the artwork is very nice. So it's very colorful, and it's all done a lot with the fall leaves and that kind of thing. So it's kind of seasonal too. So it's a fun book. It's fun having it in different languages and see the amount of community and people that are created with the, you know, coming together for the different languages as well.
Yeah, and like you, I'm so bummed that I didn't learn Italian. I mean, I tried. I was taking a little bit in college at one point in time, but now my daughter, she's a nurse in Texas, so she's learning Spanish through Duolingo, and I'm
Okay.
trying that. And
Okay.
it actually, out of everything I've tried so far, it's the most engaging. So, you
Okay.
know,
I'll have to remember that.
I could order a pizza now in Italian
Nice.
and say whether my next door neighbor is nice or shy. So
That's awesome.
I'm getting there.
My mom always felt bad because she lived in California as well the last years of her life, and she says, you know, if you don't use it, you lose it. And she didn't have anyone in California to speak Italian to. Her, you know, her family were all back in Pennsylvania, in Michigan. And so she'd have phone calls with them, and they would break out of English and break into Italian to communicate with each other just to remember it, just so they didn't forget it. You know, that was, they didn't want to forget their home language. So.
Yeah, I don't blame them. And they were probably speaking dialect too. They probably really weren't.
They
speaking
were.
Italian,
they were speaking
right?
dialect from Pretendro. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I noticed that when my husband and I went to Italy too. You know, we started in Rome. We flew into Rome. We stayed at a B&B there. And really nice people. Some of them spoke Italian. Some of them spoke like a broken English. So we were able to communicate. And I noticed that the dialect was real close, you know, because we're not far from Rome. So real close. But once we got into Abruzzo, the dialect got closer. And then once we got into the village, that I was home. That was it. That was sitting around grandma's table. You know, that was word for word, syllable by syllable. Yeah.
Well, and it's funny because we when we were in my mom's home village, they were speaking Italian, and but just over Christmas, one of the people that we met there, Rocco, he was sending me some videos of the local, you know, feast before Christmas.
Oh yeah,
on the 23rd,
feast of the seven fishes.
Well, actually, there they have this thing. The night of the bakers, or baker's night.
Ooh.
Which is December 23rd. I don't know the whole story behind it, but the only thing I could figure out is the bakers probably baked all day on Christmas Eve, or baked all night the 23rd. But anyway, this procession starts with a man, you know, an older man yelling very high, very loudly, you know, announcing something in Italian, I guess, that, you know, something about the bakers or whatever. But as soon as I heard that, I was like, that's my grandparents. That's the way my grandparents talked.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't
it? It wasn't
wonderful?
Italian.
It was their own dialect. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It was their own dialect. And they say, Italians say, they can tell where each other is from based on that dialect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the driver was, he was from Puglia. So he was, you know, he would say something in Barese and then say it in Italian, and it wasn't even close. Mm-hmm. Wasn't even close. So before we go, I want to ask you, so now, have you researched your husband at all? Has he researched anything?
My husband's family, he has a cousin who lives in Las Vegas, and we've spoken to him a few times. He's come to visit, and he has done extensive genealogy on my husband's mother's side, on his mother's side. So they've done extensive. As far as we know, his sister was the last one to do genealogy on his father's side. However, she passed away a few years back as well. But what he remembers from that is that somehow they were traced back to the Vikings. His last name is Varner with a V. So apparently they've got Pennsylvania Dutch in them. They've got, I think, Irish. They've got a bunch of different nationalities in there. But yeah, they were shipbuilders at one point, you know, way back in the early days. They were shipbuilders. And so, yeah, there's not a whole lot that we know. But yeah. And then my biological father was born in America, but his family is from Italy as well. His parents and his oldest brother. There were 9 siblings, but his oldest brother was the only one born in Italy, and then they made their way to the U.S. So, and they were from Calabria.
So. Yeah, I have some from Calabria too. Well, send me your husband's stuff. I'll take a look at, because I could trace back to my paternal grandmother back to Rollo, the Duke of Normandy, direct line.
Wow. Yeah.
Because she was from a noble family, and what's interesting about Rollo and Ragnar is that, you know, for anybody who's listening that's familiar with the show The Vikings, they weren't brothers. In fact, they may have even lived at different times, and they're not even sure if Ragnar was actually a real person at all.
Oh, wow.
His sons were, so that they could historically, although they don't portray them historically correctly in the Vikings, but his sons were real. Most historians or most genealogists that trace that believe that Ragnar was not a real person, that he was probably, you know, more than one person potentially.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And, but they definitely weren't, even if he was real, they definitely weren't. Rollo and him weren't brothers. So, Rollo was the Duke of Normandy, like they show in the movie. I didn't realize that William the Conqueror was a descendant of Rollo, the Duke
Wow.
of Normandy. So, you know, when you start getting into that European, and when you start getting into those European families, everybody's connected to everybody in some sort of way. Because it was
Right.
all a power struggle, right? So
yeah.
They
Well,
all had a
even here today, you know, even in our lives today here in California, there's Varners everywhere. And
really?
My husband was in real estate with me for 20 years, and we'd run into people all the time, and they'd say, "Oh, are you related to so and so Varner and so and so Varner?" And my husband would say, "I don't think so. You know, I don't think so," because as far as he knew, the only Varner family he had were in Washington State or Oregon. Not so much California or, you know, this way. So who knows, you know, who knows? We never, like I said, he never really did. His sister did a lot of genealogy, but we don't have any of that information. So.
Yeah, it will be. Yeah, if he wants to submit some things, I'll take a look, because my ex-wife was, her family grew up in New York, and I was able to trace her family back to England and Germany and Dutch. And her family's going back were very, you know, prominent people in New Amsterdam, you know, New
Okay.
York at
Nope.
way back when. And they
That's
owned
cool.
tons and tons of property. I mean, throughout Long Island and New York City. And I don't think she ever knew it until until I told her. So
yeah. You're like, which generation dropped that ball? We should have passed all that property down.
Believe me, if my cousin in Italy, my fourth cousin Cinzia, was still trying to figure out how to get back the land for my third great grandparents, because they owned at least six houses in six different places in Italy that
Oh,
we know of.
wow.
So they were very, very well to do, and that's my grandmother's father's side. My grandmother's mother's side. My ninth great grandfather owns or was lord over much of what's Campania today.
Wow.
You know, but
Wow. How
there's no
fun that is.
jewels, there's no
Yeah.
castles. Well, there's castles, but we don't own
Yeah.
them.
Wow.
Unfortunately, that's what my wife kept saying. How come you don't have any of this stuff? I said,
Yeah.
well, I think I know
You had to
one
look
of
pretty hard to find it too.
yeah, my grandmother's, let's see, my grandmother's grandfather apparently liked women and gambling a little bit too much. So, but you know, all of these things, you know, even like today, the Kennedys, you know, everything gets watered down
Yeah,
unless
that's
something
true.
else happens. You know, the Rockefellers, I mean, they're not what they used to be as far as, you know, so all those families, and somebody else takes their place, right?
Yeah.
I don't think either one of us has taken everybody's place, but
No,
it's nice to
no.
think about.
No, but I am so, I'm so proud to be the granddaughter of a sheep herder, a farmer, in that the way that he lived, you know, and the kind of man that he was. I'm so proud. And one of the real quick story for you, when Rick and I were in Italy, my husband and I went to Italy in Abruzzo. We did have a guide for a couple of days. It showed us all around, and he took us to a farm. It's one of those where you farm to table kind of thing. So we went there for it was closed that day, but he opened it for us, and we were there, and we were like royalty, and we had the whole restaurant to ourselves, and we had this wonderful, you know, 8-course meal that was amazing. And after it was all over, the owner came out from the kitchen, and the guide knew him very well, so he introduced us. And when he told this gentleman that my grandfather was a sheep herder in Abruzzo, this guy, you know, he just grabbed my hand and he, in Italian, because it was translated for me, in Italian, he grabbed my hand and he said, it was an honor to have me in his restaurant, that the sheep herders are the, I can't remember the words now, the sheep herders, like the core of the earth. Like they were the, you know, they were the most important. They provided the food. They took care of the food. They provided the food. So he went on and on. And I just, we took pictures of everybody we met. We took a picture with, and we forgot to take a picture with him. And I have to go back just to get a picture with this person. I mean, he was larger than life. He was a big, big, big man. And he was just, his eyes had so much warmth and love, and just made me feel like family, and made me really feel my grandfather in that moment and how special my grandfather was, you know? So, and all the farmers and all the sheep herders. And so, yeah, that was pretty cool. That was,
and you know, that's the point. That's what people don't get. When they say they want to go to Rome, or they want to go to this place, that's the experience. I mean, we had the same thing when we went to Rito. They didn't know us from, they knew my grandmother's house, my grandparents' house, where my uncle lived. The priest spent like 2 hours with us in the church, just showing us around the church and telling us about the church. And they have the saints dressed in, you know, cloth costumes that are 200 years old, that, yeah, you know, these, yeah, are the same saints that they bring to the street, and, you know, giving you the history. But, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that, because you could see the warmth in everybody's eyes, mm-hmm, how genuine they are.
Right.
You know, that they're thrilled that you've taken the time to go back to the hometown of your grandfather, your grandmother. They're absolutely thrilled about it.
They are. They're so happy that they're not forgotten.
Yeah.
They're so happy that their hard lives, their very difficult, hard lives, are appreciated and respected and remembered, you know? Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And those people weren't sissy, you know, they, like you said, they were, you know, washing the clothes and the thing. I mean, even today, when you go to Naples and you see the clothes hung out on the windows, yeah, you know.
It's
like, I saw that. I was like, wow, New York used to be like this, you know, 70 years ago when I was growing up. They had clotheslines, but not anymore. But, you know, they, you know, our grandparents and the generations before them, they were hardworking people. And that's what I got from, you know, my grandparents and my, you know, my aunts and uncles, right? You know, you are what you make yourself to be.
That's right.
And if, you know, if you're a hard worker, you know, you get paid back in kind. And like I said, I think part of it is even with the people that you meet over in Italy, there's something that sparks them about us that they appreciate.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things that kind of blew my mind a little bit, and it kind of still does, is that when I met Laura Lucci over in Pichendro, who became our guide that week, you know, I thought about this, and I thought, you know, our families left there because of hard times after the war, and they came to America to give themselves, that were mostly their children, a better life. And her parents did the exact same. And now here she is back there, born and raised in America, you know, mm-hmm, graduated and everything in America, and living back in this little tiny hill town, medieval village, raising two daughters there. Yeah, with modern conveniences, but still a lot in the old ways and the old traditions and everything. And her dream was to get the girls back to America so that they can see and learn life in America as well. So it just kind of blows my mind. Everything is full circle, you know, it just, especially through her and her family, it's full circle.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. So what's your website, right? Where can people find your books?
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I have 9 books published. The Italian book is there as well. It's www.dianadelrusso.com. I kept it as simple as I could. It's my name. Just dianadelrusso.com. So there's some free download pages, coloring pages for kids if anybody wants that. There's lots and lots of pictures, photos of places I've been, things I've done, charity events I've been a part of, things like that. But yeah, the books, there are currently, and I will throw this out there just so people aren't confused. There are currently three books that are featured on the website. Those three books, two of them are Christmas books, and one is about kindness through a gentle dragon. But those books, unfortunately, are out of print at this time, only because when I first started as a writer and an author, I didn't really know a lot. And it was before, pretty much before the internet and all of that. So I signed up with a, what they call a vanity press, and I had those three books published through them. That wasn't going well. People weren't really hearing about the books or seeing the books or anything. I basically did all the sales through word of mouth, that kind of stuff. So once the internet took hold, and once we had this huge author community through social media, I learned a lot about self-publishing, and that seems to be the way of our world now. So I pulled those books from those publishers and shut that down. And now I'm in the process of getting back with illustrators, freshening those books up, and then I will republish them myself as I have published these cousins books and all the other books that I have. So people go on there, they get a little confused that the book is there, but yet they can't buy it. But they'll come back. They'll come back because like Christmas is a special time for me. And so the Christmas books are real special as well. And they were family driven as well. I think all my work is family driven. So.
Yeah, no, that's great. And that's good to know. Well, listen, thanks again. I really appreciate you taking the time. And, you know, we'll get everybody out there to take a look at the books.
Oh, I appreciate you, Bob. I appreciate your time. And this has been a lot of fun reminiscing about our families in Italy. I really enjoy that. I hope people give the books a try. And, you know, if anybody wants to reach out, they can reach out through social media or through the website. So
super great.